Welcome to the Council of Institutional Investors podcast on corporate governance and financial regulation. I'm Jeff Mahoney, General Counsel of CII. The purpose of these monthly episodes is to update CII members and the general public on developments in corporate governance and financial regulation and CII's related advocacy activities. This update covers the period from March 31st to April 30th, 2021. So let's start with the United States Congress. On April 14th, the United States Senate, in a 53-45 vote, confirmed former head of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, Gary Gensler, as chair of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission until July 5th, 2021, when the current term for the chairmanship ends. Despite statements of support for Mr. Gensler from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association, the Investment Company Institute, the American Securities Association, the Managed Funds Association, and the Investment Advisor Association, just three Senate Republicans backed Mr. Gensler's confirmation: Susan Collins of Maine, Charles E. Grassley of Iowa, and Cynthia M. Loomis of Wyoming. Ranking member of the Senate Banking Committee, Patrick J. Toomey of Pennsylvania, announced the day before the Senate vote that he was not supporting Mr. Gensler's nomination. During a March 2nd confirmation hearing before the Senate Banking Committee, Mr. Gensler told lawmakers that if confirmed, he would take a fresh look at rules passed last year by the Commission on Proxy Advisors. He would work on requirements related to corporate disclosure of climate-related risks and help reform Rule 10b5-1 executive stock trading plans. He also indicated the SEC should explore disclosure of corporate political spending. On April 15th, Senate Majority Leader Charles E. Schumer of New York filed a motion to invoke cloture or limit debate on Mr. Gensler's nomination to be an SEC commissioner for a second term expiring June 5th, 2026. On April 19th, House Financial Services Committee Ranking Member Patrick T. McHenry of North Carolina and Representative Bill Huizinga of Michigan sent a letter to Securities and Exchange Commission Chair Gary Gensler requesting information regarding his near-term priorities. The letter also solicited comment on seven proposed good governance initiatives outlined in a February letter to then-acting SEC Chair Allison Herren Lee concerning market infrastructure, agency transparency, and ESG disclosures. Noting that the February letter requested that the commission publicly release a staff report on the potential impacts associated with movement to a shorter settlement cycle beyond T+2, the lawmakers reiterate that request again, and if such report is not completed, ask for confirmation that Chair Gensler will prioritize its completion and release the report to the public by the end of this year. Observing that former acting chair Lee recently announced a number of initiatives centered around the commission's enhanced focus on climate-related and other ESG priorities, the lawmakers insist that the commission ensure any changes to its disclosure regime are consistent with the historical practice of requiring only disclosures of information that are actually material to investors. In particular, they request Chair Gensler's confirmation that, one, any ESG-related changes to the SEC's disclosure regime will be rooted in the SEC's historical touchstone materiality standard, and two, the commission will not effectively engage in ESG-related rulemaking through new enforcement or examination standards in the interim period before any relevant regulatory changes are completed through the notice and comment rulemaking process. On April 20th, the Senate confirmed by a vote of 54-45 the nomination of Gary Gensler to be an SEC commissioner for a second term expiring June 5th, 2026. Also on April 20th, the House Financial Services Committee marked up a number of bills, including the following bills addressing corporate disclosure of political contributions, environmental, social, and governance metrics, and board diversity. Those bills included H.R. 1087, the Shareholder Political Transparency Act, which would require public companies to submit quarterly reports to both the Securities and Exchange Commission and investors detailing the amount, date, and nature of the company's expenditures for political activities. If the political expenditure was made in support of or in opposition to a particular candidate or was made to a trade association, then the company would have to disclose the candidate and or trade association. The bill also requires public companies disclose in their annual reports any political expenditures over $10,000 in the previous year, as well as the nature and amount of any political expenditures the company plans to make in the upcoming year. A second bill marked up on April 20th by the House Financial Services Committee was H.R. 1187, the ESG Disclosure Simplification Act, which would require companies to disclose certain ESG metrics to shareholders. These include information about the connection between those metrics and the company's long-term business strategy. The bill would require the Securities and Exchange Commission to adopt rules requiring companies to disclose ESG metrics and filings that require audited financial statements. The bill also would establish a Sustainability Financial Advisory Committee to provide the Securities and Exchange Commission with a report identifying policy changes that could facilitate sustainable investments. A third bill marked up on April 20th by the House Financial Services Committee is H.R. 1277, the Improving Corporate Governance Through Diversity Act. This bill would require public companies to annually disclose the voluntary self-identified gender, race, ethnicity, and veteran status of their board of directors. This bill passed the House of Representatives in the prior Congress as H.R. 5084. On April 21st, the House Financial Services Committee adopted by a vote of 30-23 its views and estimates for the fiscal year 2022 budget resolution as amended. In this document, the committee expresses concern that deregulatory actions recently taken weaken critical safeguards and increase the exposure to risk for taxpayers, and accordingly encourages financial regulators to 1. Re-examine the current state of the regulatory framework and take actions to ensure appropriate safeguards against a future costly financial crisis, and 2. Utilize their full supervisory and enforcement authorities to hold massive financial institutions and their senior executives accountable when they break the law and harm consumers. With respect to the Securities and Exchange Commission, the document urges the commission to prioritize its enforcement and examination activities and complete the remaining Dodd-Frank rulemakings, including a rulemaking pursuant to Section 929XA of the Dodd-Frank Act, which requires monthly public short sale disclosures by security. With respect to the SEC, the views and estimates also suggest that the commission examine how and whether market participants are preparing for LIBOR transition, firms' compliance with regulation best interest and form CRS, and how firms are implementing financial technology. The views and estimates also raise concerns about several market infrastructure issues highlighted by the recent stock market volatility, including 1, the inherent conflicts of interest between best execution and payment for order flow, 2, the emergence of gamification and how it manipulates investor conduct, and 3, the efficacy of anti-market manipulation laws and whether technology and social media have outpaced regulation in a manner that leaves investors in the markets exposed to unnecessary and unavoidable risks. Although the document expresses support for the advancement of responsible innovation in financial services, including those related to artificial intelligence, machine learning, cloud computing, faster payments, digital assets, distributed ledger technology, and digital identity, it stresses that Congress must maintain a strong legal framework that equips regulators with the resources, training, and tools necessary to ensure that advancements in technology do not harm consumers, threaten data privacy, undermine financial stability, weaken cybersecurity, allow for or encourage money laundering and terror finance, or promote discriminatory practices. The committee's views and estimates will be transmitted to the House Budget Committee for consideration in creating a budget resolution for fiscal year 2022. On April 22nd, the Senate Banking Committee Republicans sent a letter to Special Presidential Envoy for Climate, John Kerry, expressing concern about reports that he has been pressuring banks to make extra legal commitments regarding energy-related lending and investment activities, and the administration's related effort to create and impose new global warming disclosure requirements on companies without any explicit statutory authorization from Congress. Citing Mr. Kerry's recent comments indicating that President Joe Biden's forthcoming global warming executive order will require disclosure, the lawmakers stress that all public companies, including banks, are already required to disclose material information, including climate-related risks. And the letter raises concerns that any new disclosure requirement would force companies to disclose non-material climate-related information that may be based on highly speculative data and inconsistent sustainability standards. They emphasize, moreover, that inundating investors with such information would undermine the quality and reliability of the Securities Exchange Commission's disclosure framework. And they contend that the apparent objective of this effort is not to protect investors, but to punish lawful energy companies by deterring lending to and investment in such firms. Accordingly, they urge the Biden administration to refrain from abusing government power via executive order, regulatory or supervisory overreach, or informal pressure to steer lending and investments away from lawful energy businesses. Also on April 22nd, CII sent a letter to House Financial Services Committee Chair Maxine Waters of California and Ranking Member Patrick J. McHenry of North Carolina, expressing strong support for the Improving Corporate Governance Through Diversity Act. In the letter, CII states the bill would provide material information to investors, improve corporate performance, and take a cost-effective approach to diversity disclosure. Also on April 22nd, the United States House of Representatives adopted six financial services bills that would, one, require the Securities Exchange Commission to study and report on possible revisions to limit the ability of issuers of securities and issuer insiders to adopt Rule 10b5-1 trading plans and revise regulations consistent with the results of the study. Two, direct the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and the SEC to jointly establish a digital asset working group. Three, establish a senior investor task force at the SEC charged with crafting recommendations for legislative or regulatory actions to address problems encountered by senior investors. Four, prohibit a debt collector from representing the service members that failure to cooperate with a debt collector will result in a reduction of rank, a revocation of security clearance, or military prosecution. Five, modify the discount given by the Federal Housing Administration on single-family mortgage insurance premium payments for first-time homebuyers who complete a financial management counseling program. And six, a bill to direct the Department of Housing and Urban Development to issue a report on barriers to making FHA single-family mortgage insurance available for mortgages under $70,000. On April 27th, CII sent a letter to Senate Banking Committee Chair Sherrod Brown of Ohio and Ranking Member Patrick J. Toomey of Pennsylvania, strongly supporting the use of the Congressional Review Act to overturn the 2020 amendments to the SEC's shareholder proposal rule, which raised proponent eligibility and proposal resubmission requirements. In the letter, CII argues that a Congressional Review Act disapproval is appropriate, given that the amendments would result in a process that's more complicated, more constricting, and more costly. In addition, the letter states that the SEC amendments were adopted through a rulemaking process that the SEC's own investor advocate found to be fundamentally flawed. Adopted in 1996, the Congressional Review Act provides the ability to nullify federal agency rules adopted near the end of a prior administration. Disapproval of a rule requires the adoption of a joint resolution from Congress and the president's signature. Congressional Review Act also establishes that a new rule cannot be issued in substantially the same form as a disapproved rule unless it is specifically authorized by a subsequent law. Now, turning now to the Biden administration. On April 22nd, pursuant to Executive Order 14008, the White House published the International Climate Finance Plan, which addresses the provisions for mobilization of financial resources to assist developing countries to 1. Reduce and or avoid greenhouse gas emissions, and 2. Build resilience and adapt to the impacts of climate change. The plan, which is intended to provide a strategic orientation for the future of U.S. climate finance and guide the work of the relevant U.S. government agencies, proposes 1. Scaling up climate finance and enhancing its impact. 2. Mobilizing private sector finance. 3. Taking steps to end international official financing for carbon-intensive fossil fuel-based energy. 4. Making capital flows consistent with low-emissions, climate-resilient pathways. And 5. Defining, measuring, and reporting U.S. public climate finance. Notably, to support the flow of capital toward activities that are consistent with low GHG emissions and climate-resilient pathways, the Treasury will, 1, engage with the Financial Stability Board, the International Association of Insurance Supervisors, the G20, and the International Monetary Fund to improve the data available for assessing and monitoring climate-related risks and coordinate with U.S. regulators and other agencies working on climate-related financial data in the financial standard-setting bodies, and 2, support and coordination with U.S. regulators, the direction of work undertaken by the International Financial Reporting Standards Foundation, the International Organization of Securities Commissions, and the Financial Stability Board towards consistent, comparable, and reliable climate-related financial disclosures, and help shape any forthcoming recommendations or international standards to be compatible with the U.S. domestic framework and regulatory process. Also on April 22nd, speaking at the Institute of International Finance, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen discussed her agency's efforts to support the Biden administration's whole-of-government approach to aggressively tackle climate change, including efforts related to the measurement and mitigation of climate-related financial risks and related disclosures. Although she noted that in theory it should not be very challenging to mobilize capital as investor demand for climate-aligned investments is rapidly increasing, Secretary Yellen raised concerns that the current financial reporting system is not producing the reliable, consistent, and comparable disclosures necessary for investors to accurately compare climate-related risk and opportunities across companies. She stressed, moreover, that investors need consistency of reporting frameworks across sectors, as well as comparability across jurisdictions, and underscored the importance of building on existing work to improve climate-related financial risk disclosure, describing the efforts of the Financial Stability Board's Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures as a solid framework for climate disclosures. Observing that the Securities and Exchange Commission is currently reviewing its 2010 guidance on climate-related disclosures, Secretary Yellen reported that Treasury will work with the Securities and Exchange Commission as part of its participation in international discussions to promote effective and consistent approaches to disclosure. In addition, Secretary Yellen pledged that the Financial Stability Oversight Council will prioritize analysis of climate-related financial risks this year, with a particular focus on bringing together individual regulators' perspectives to accelerate overall progress and understand risks to financial stability. Let's now turn to other activities of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. On March 31st, staff of the SEC's Division of Corporation Finance issued a statement that addresses certain accounting, financial reporting, and governance issues that should be carefully considered before a private operating company undertakes a business combination with a special purpose acquisition company. It also covers books and records, internal control requirements, and initial listing standards of national securities exchanges. In the latter section of the statement, the staff notes that if a special purpose acquisition company is listed on a national securities exchange, such as the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ, in order to remain listed after the merger, the combined company must satisfy quantitative and qualitative initial listing standards upon consummation of the business combination, which includes certain corporate governance requirements. In addition, the statement specifies that a company seeking to list must meet minimum standards, such as the number of round lot holders, publicly held shares, market value of publicly held shares, and share price. On the same day the statement was issued, SEC Acting Chief Accountant Paul Munter issued a public statement on financial reporting and auditing considerations of companies merging with SPACs. Chief Accountant Munter outlined some of the key considerations related to the unique risks and challenges presented by private companies entering the public markets through a merger with a SPAC, including considerations related to market and timing, financial reporting, internal controls, corporate governance, and audit committees. Chief Accountant Munter concludes the statement with some words of caution. Quote, as more private companies enter our public markets through these structures, we remind companies, their auditors, audit committee members, and other stakeholders that the health of our public markets and the ability of companies to efficiently raise capital in these markets depends upon financial reporting participants fulfilling their respective professional responsibilities in providing high-quality financial information to investors, unquote. On April 1st, CII sent a letter to the SEC expressing general support for the NASDAQ's amended proposed listing standards on disclosure of board diversity and recommending that the SEC approve them. NASDAQ first released the proposed changes to listing standards back in December. Those changes would require listed companies to provide statistical information regarding diversity among the members of their boards and to explain why they do not have at least two diverse directors, if that is the case. On February 26th, NASDAQ amended those proposed changes to add a defined term for two or more races or ethnicities, lowered the diversity goal for companies with smaller boards, and made other allowances for companies slow to meet the goals, and provided additional justification for the proposed rule change. CII's comment letter states that although NASDAQ's proposed definition of diversity is narrower than the one suggested by CII's policies, we believe that the amendments would improve transparency and comparability of disclosures across companies, and we believe investors can use the resulting transparency and comparability to make better informed investment and voting decisions. On April 8th, Acting SEC Division of Corporation Finance Director John Coates issued a statement addressing the unprecedented surge in the use and popularity of special purpose acquisition companies, with a particular focus on the legal liability that attaches to disclosures in a so-called de-SPAC transaction. A de-SPAC transaction is a business combination transaction in which a special purpose acquisition company, the private company to be acquired, or a new shell holding company issues equity to target owners and sometimes to other investors. Director Coates' statement also indicates that the SEC staff are continuing to look carefully at filings and disclosures by SPACs and their private targets, and in accordance with the division's ordinary practices, are reviewing these filings, seeking clearer disclosure and providing guidance to registrants and the public. On April 9th, the SEC's Examination Division published a risk alert highlighting observations of deficiencies and internal control weaknesses and effective practices from examinations of investment advisors and funds regarding ESG investing. The risk alert concludes that the rapid growth in demand for such products, the increasing number of ESG products and services, and the lack of standardized and precise ESG definitions presents certain risks. During examinations of firms engaged in ESG investing, SEC staff observed some instances of potentially misleading statements regarding ESG investing processes and representations regarding the adherence to global ESG frameworks. In particular, despite claims to have formal processes in place for ESG investing, SEC staff noted a lack of policies and procedures related to ESG investing. Policies and procedures that do not appear to be reasonably designed to prevent violations of law or that were not implemented. Documentation of ESG-related investment decisions that was weak or unclear, and compliance programs that did not appear to be reasonably designed to guard against inaccurate ESG-related disclosures and marketing materials. In addition, the risk alert specifies that examinations of firms claiming to engage in ESG investing will focus on, among other matters, portfolio management, performance advertising and marketing, and compliance programs. Accordingly, the SEC's examination division encourages market participants promoting ESG investing to clients, prospective clients, investors, and prospective investors to 1. Examine whether their disclosures, marketing claims, and other public statements related to ESG investing are accurate and consistent with internal firm practices, and 2. Ensure that their approaches to ESG investing are implemented consistently throughout the firm where relevant and are adequately addressed in the firm's policies and procedures and subject to appropriate oversight by compliance personnel. On April 12th, Acting SEC Division of Corporation Finance Director John Coates and Acting SEC Chief Accountant Paul Munter issued a statement highlighting the potential accounting implications of certain terms that may be common in warrants included in special purpose acquisition company transactions. The statement outlines the applicable financial reporting considerations if a registrant and its auditors determine there is an error in any previously filed financial statements. On April 16th, the SEC voted to reopen for 30 days the comment period on a proposed universal proxy rule, which would give shareholders the flexibility to vote for any combination of director nominees they support in a contested election without having to attend the meeting in person. Then Acting SEC Chair Allison Herron Lee described the reopening as an important step toward finalizing rules that will facilitate clarity and efficiency for shareholders voting in director elections. Under the current rules, shareholders voting by proxy have no practical ability to split their ticket and vote for the combination of shareowner and management nominees that they believe best serve their economic interests. This is because neither company management nor dissidents are required to include all bona fide candidates on their proxy cards. If adopted this year, the rule would mark the final chapter of a 7-year effort by market participants to improve proxy voting in contested elections, beginning with a CII petition for rulemaking in 2014. The SEC proposed a rule to require universal proxies back in 2016 during Chairman Mary Jo White's tenure, but it languished. In 2018, universal proxy was a discussion topic during the SEC's proxy process roundtable and the focus of a widely read white paper by McKinsey Partners. 2019, the SEC's Investor Advisory Committee, under the leadership of former CII Board Chair Ann Sheehan, issued a proxy plumbing recommendation that included suggestions for how to move forward with the final rule. The first U.S. contest for board seats to use reciprocal universal proxy cards also took place that year in 2019 between Rice Team and energy producer EQT. While the 2016 proposed rule required the dissident to solicit holders of shares representing a simple majority of outstanding voting power, a working group, including CII and several CII members, submitted a letter in August of 2020 expressing general support for increasing the minimum solicitation threshold to 2/3 of outstanding voting power. On April 22nd, CII sent a letter to the SEC commenting on the commission's recent semi-annual regulatory agenda and recommending that the agency prioritize the following actions. First, enactment of the section of the Dodd-Frank Act directing the SEC to adopt a rule to require clawbacks of unearned executive compensation in certain circumstances. 2015, the SEC proposed a clawback rule. CI believes provides a floor for such policies, but never took final action on the rule. Second, CII's letter seeks approval of NASDAQ's proposed board diversity proposal and a proposal of a clear SEC rule on board diversity disclosures to limit disclosure arbitrage and improve transparency and comparability among SEC registrants. Third, CII's letter requests proposed changes to SEC Rule 10b5-1 to close the loopholes that executives now employ to use the rule as cover for improper stock trades. Fourth, CII's letter seeks a proposed rule that would require companies' compensation discussion analysis reports include an explanation of why non-GAAP measures are better for determining executive pay than generally accepted accounting principles, and a quantitative reconciliation or a hyperlink to a reconciliation in another SEC filing of these two sets of numbers. Fifth, CII's letter requests the adoption of a final rule amending the director election rules to require universal proxy cards that ensure full flexibility on both management's and the distance card. And finally, CII's letter requests that the SEC explore the steps it would take to require the various intermediaries that process proxy votes to cooperate to ensure that shareholders' votes are counted accurately and that proxy voters can confirm vote execution with a few clicks on a keyboard. CII also sent a letter on April 22nd to SEC Chair Gary Gensler. The correspondent says CII looks forward to working with the chairman on enacting CII's priorities and includes an attachment to the letter CII sent commenting on the SEC's regulatory agenda. In the letter, CII also urges Chairman Gensler to appoint a SEC chief accountant who has a deep understanding and appreciation for the needs of investors, the primary consumers of financial reports. Such an appointment is especially timely and appropriate given the interest by investors in sustainability reporting and its interrelationship with financial accounting and reporting. Finally, in other CII corporate governance-related news, on April 15th, the CII Research and Education Fund released a report entitled Considerations Before Investing in SPACs. The paper is intended to raise awareness of certain aspects of special purpose acquisition companies, including risk misalignment, unusual attributes of the SPAC de-SPAC process, uncertain reliability of information shaping investor decisions on whether to redeem shares, and a number of other issues. While the paper does not dismiss or embrace the SPAC model to going public, it concludes that investors who hold SPAC shares through the de-SPAC merger are especially at risk. That concludes my monthly corporate governance and financial regulation update. If you have any questions regarding any of the issues discussed, please feel free to email me at jeff@cii.org. Until next time, I'm Jeff Mahoney. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Voice of Corporate Governance, brought to you by the Council of Institutional Investors. The Voice of Corporate Governance is a free, non-sponsored podcast that highlights critical developments in corporate governance and other important issues affecting institutional investors. The views expressed by those interviewed on the podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of CII or its members. For more information on CII and its policies on corporate governance, please visit our website at www.cii.org.